Hello and welcome to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. And In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. Go grab your booth at Bells and Whistles. You're listening to In the Booth, so you know they got booths there. Go grab a beer and chill out. Hang out at Bells and Whistles. Awesome sports to watch and maybe a Canucks game as well.
Maybe one of these weeks we should record in the booth, in a booth, at Bells and Whistles. That sounds like a great idea.
I think we will. Let's do that.
Absolutely. I'm sure Bells and Whistles was absolutely bumping on Thursday night for a barn burner of a third period in overtime between the Vancouver Canucks and the St. Louis Blues. Ultimately, the Canucks fall in overtime, 4-3. Philip Broberg got the winner on a 2-on-1 set up by Braden Schenn. And my first question for you, Randeep, is in light of the fact that the Canucks were trailing 1-0 going to the third, but also in light of the fact that they led 2-1 in the third period, was the overtime loss to the Blues a point lost or a point gained?
Yeah, this is a tricky one because you feel like the way that they're winning this game, you have that lead in the third period that they should have won it. But the fact of the matter is they battled back. I guess what I'm trying to say, Ron Burgundy style, I'm in a glass case of emotion. I don't know what to believe here. It was a bit of a roller coaster batch. And I think there's an element that says, hey, if you've got a lead, a one goal lead in the third period, you got to lock it down. You got to manage the game better than Vancouver was able to. But given that situation, given that they did lose that lead, it was a test of their resiliency to come back in. So I think it was a little bit of positive and a little bit of negative. I'm usually not one to sit on a fence on certain things, but I think in this case, you got to be happy that you at least picked up 1 point because that was really important.
Well, I'm going to pick a side, right, and I'm going to say that it was a point gained. And the reason I'm going to say that is because I thought the Blues, throughout most of that game, were the better team. Like, if the Canucks had found a way to win that, that would have been more like a smash and grab for Vancouver than a thorough, complete performance like we saw against the Jets on home ice earlier in the week. So ultimately, at the end of the night, the team that deserved to win did win. But the fact that the Canucks didn't lose in regulation, the fact that Besser gets that late equalizer in the dying seconds of the third, the fact that the playoff odds didn't massively swing in one direction or the other as a result of this game ending in regulation, I think is probably a fair result for both teams, and ultimately St. Louis deserved to win more than Vancouver did.
Yeah, over the 60 minutes, I think you can say, you know, pretty conclusively that St. Louis played the better game. They were the ones that were able to swing momentum in their direction. And I'm not looking specifically at shots and goal, but just the way that they were able to control play. For Vancouver, they needed a big third period. They got a big third period in a couple of ways. They were able to get a couple of goals, get the lead, and then they coughed up the lead. But that final 3 seconds where they were able to get that goal from Brock Besser, you know, that's something I think you look at, a big play for this team to get back into it. An excellent play by Quinn Hughes in the neutral zone to create a little bit of space. And then you have Elias Pettersson making a heck of a pass and Brock Besser shooting the puck confidently. They needed that. In the last two games, we've started to see Brock Besser turn into the old Brock Besser of last year. But they need to be better full 60 minutes. I think we can both agree there where you're happy to pick up the full point. But there was still some conversation Kiefer Sherwood mentioned in after the game saying the team has to be better over three periods.
Yeah, and I think it was a night of highs and lows for the Canucks' top players. You know, you allude to the great play from Quinn Hughes on the tying goal, the nice juke move at center to create that play and that chance that ultimately Besser finished. But he also tipped a puck into his own net on the 1-0 goal by Zach Bolduc. Elias Pettersson, great setup on that goal. But he also turns the puck over in overtime, which leads to the Philip Broberg winner. So consistency is something we've talked about all season long from this team. And I think, you know, we think about it in terms of have a bunch of good games in a row rather than, you know, a good game, a bad game, a win and a loss. But I think consistency can apply in game as well. And there needed to be more consistency in the way the group played and in the way their top players played on Thursday night in St. Louis.
Well, through 40 minutes, the top six forwards that, you know, you need to really lean on this time of the year. Had three shots on goal. Pugh Suter had one, Brock Besser had one, and Jake DeBrusk had one. Elias Pettersson did not have one. And I know in the third period they elevated their game. Brock Besser had a couple of goals as well. There was improvement, but if you can get, you know, your leaders, your drivers offensively to get going a little bit earlier on, St. Louis early in this game really showed Vancouver where the intensity was going to be, where Vancouver had to go if they wanted to win this game. And I don't think until the third period Vancouver was able to match that level. A little bit in the second period, but really in the third period is where that urgency showed up. You got to bring that a little bit more often. There's not many games left to go here. If you're not urgent now, Batch, I don't know when you're going to be. And this is a four-horse race. Calgary had a huge win on Thursday night against New Jersey Devils. Obviously, St. Louis won as well. And Vancouver, you know, if you want to be leading this race, if you want to stay in this race, you got to make sure that you string together strong efforts back to back. But you're right, it starts in winning one game and picking up 2 points.
And so the Canucks will continue this six-game road trip Saturday in New York against the Rangers. And, you know, not that, you know, I'm going to try and give the Canucks any excuses here, but the schedule hasn't exactly been too friendly to them of late. You look at the win they got in Calgary last week, second half of a back-to-back with travel against a team that had been rested since the weekend. You look at the game in St. Louis. Canucks have to play Winnipeg on home ice, fly to St. Louis, and play an early game the next day. Now they go to New York and play a really early game Saturday morning, and the Rangers are obviously a lot more used to playing those matinee games. So another challenge for the Canucks in terms of a Rangers team that will have some desperation in their game in the thick of a playoff race in the Eastern Conference, but also not setting up well for Vancouver with the early start time and all the travel that they've been going through here in the last week.
Yeah, for a hockey day in Sweden, that's why there's a 10 a.m. puck drop, because two marquee teams when it comes to Swedish talent. You've got Elias Pettersson on the Canucks, Mika Zibanejad on the New York Rangers, so that's a marquee matchup out there. But listen, it's going to be a challenge. There's no doubt about that. You've got a very hungry team in the Rangers who, I will say, offensively, they've got firepower, but defensively, they are a team you can manipulate. So for Vancouver, looking to put up goals, this Rangers team really lets Igor Shesterkin out to dry on a lot of nights. So if you're looking for offense, if you're looking to push the pace, this would be a team that is susceptible to that. But beyond that, after that Saturday night game, you're hanging out in New York or the New Jersey area for basically, you know, 5 nights. And there's an advantage there for Vancouver because you don't have to travel. It gives Kevin Lankinen a little bit of rest if he's starting every single game as well. So, yes, that 10 a.m. Pacific time start is going to be difficult for Vancouver. But after that, you can kind of settle in for a couple of games. And for Vancouver, listen, every team is going to be hungry at this point in time. Up until the Seattle game, which is on April 2nd when they get back to Vancouver, you're playing a team that's playing for something. Or, at the very least, a very good team. The Jets as the final game on that road trip. So there's no layups, there's no gimmies at all on this road trip, and they're going to have to be really hitting, I think, you know, high levels early on in games. The starts are so important right now, and Vancouver is going to have to start a lot better than they did against St. Louis.
Yeah, and here's the interesting thing now with the playoff race. St. Louis vaulted past Vancouver and Calgary into that final wild card spot, but they've played one more game than the Canucks, two more than the Flames, 1 point clear of Vancouver, 2 points clear of Calgary. So on points percentage, the Flames remain in the driver's seat in this playoff race, even though they're below both St. Louis and Vancouver in the Western Conference standings right now. But this was talked about a lot going into the game for the Blues. You talked about no cupcake matchups for the Canucks. Well, there's a bunch of cupcake matchups for St. Louis. They have Chicago, a noon start on Saturday, Nashville, 3 o'clock on Sunday, and then Montreal and Nashville before a game next Saturday against the Colorado Avalanche. So that's four consecutive games coming up for the Blues against non-playoff teams, and that puts a lot of pressure on both the Canucks and the Flames, whose schedules are more difficult than that. Certainly the Canucks is, and you look ahead to what Calgary's got in the next week. They've got the Islanders on Saturday, Seattle on Tuesday, Dallas on Thursday, and Edmonton next Saturday. So a couple of hard games in there for Calgary as well. this sets up very well for the Blues if the Canucks or the Flames can't really press them and force them to, you know, stay in that conversation, force themselves to remain in that conversation in light of the fact that that it'll be a lot easier week for the Blues coming up.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a team already in the Blues that have won four straight games. They've won 11 of their last 15, so they're streaking a little bit as they head into this softer schedule. So they're going to be a challenge. And, Batch, you know, obviously covering that game, calling that game alongside you, there is a playoff feel to the St. Louis Blues team. They play fast. They play physical. Their bottom half of the lineup, their forward group is heavy. So, you know, they are, feels like ramping up, playing playoff-style hockey. Vancouver has shown elements of that. I thought Winnipeg was very much that style of hockey. They were able to get to the middle of the ice. They were able to, you know, throw their weight around a little bit and really have Winnipeg on their heels. But we didn't really see that much against St. Louis. So, you know, are you able, against this tougher level of competition? They play Vegas twice, which is going to be very difficult for Vancouver. And Calgary gets Vegas twice on the schedule as well, a little bit later on. So is that obviously something that, you know, you're going to have to play these teams, and you're probably going to have to at least, you know, pick up points against the Vegas team if you're Vancouver, and other pretty difficult matchups. You got Dallas, you got Winnipeg, as you mentioned. You have another one in Colorado coming up as well. So there are going to be some tough matchups, and Vancouver's going to have to pick up some points.
Yeah, they certainly will, Randeep. And I'm going to pose another conundrum to you here, like I did off the top about that being a point gained or a point lost in St. Louis on Thursday night. The Canucks record now is 32-25-12. So part of the reason they are in this playoff race is their ability to get a single point. Part of the reason that they're in this playoff race on the other side of things is because they only get a single point and they don't find a way to win games in overtime. And ultimately, this season, the Canucks are now 7-12 in games that have gone beyond 60 minutes. So well below 500. And there are games there that you can look back on and say the opportunity was right there for them to win those games. And with the margins so tight at this time of the year, even if you win 2, 3, 4 of those games, suddenly you're really in the driver's seat in this playoff race. Conversely, there are some tight games like the one against St. Louis on Thursday where it looked like they were going to lose in regulation. They find a way to get it to overtime. They get the single point, and that's part of the reason why they're still in it. So, you know, from looking back at this season for the Canucks, have the overtime points helped them stay in the race, or have the overtime losses dragged them back into the race?
Yeah, I'm trying to be positive here because they're still in a playoff race, but let's be honest here. When they are leading after two periods this season, they are 24-1-6. We're talking about 6 of those 12 overtime losses have come after they've been leading in the third period, or after 40 minutes anyways. And against St. Louis, they were leading in the third period. So, you know, let's just say you give them the same amount of overtime losses as St. Louis, who has 7 overtime losses. So you'd basically take 5 points from Vancouver and you get the extra point in those 5 games. They're at 81 points, 2 points back of the Minnesota Wild playing the same amount of games. We're talking about you've got a 4-point gap on the pack and you are near wild card one. So absolutely, it has been, you know, in a way, it's been good for this team because they've been in games. It feels like, you know, they're able to grind out a point. But I would say on the other side of things, it does feel like just given the character early on in this team where they were coughing up third period leads, I think it does feel like a point lost based on the fact that, you know, Minnesota would be within striking distance if they were just able to pick up a few points, Batch.
You know who else would be in striking distance is LA,
yeah,
in third in the division, although they have games in hand on the Canucks. But you're right there and much more comfortable in terms of all of these teams chasing you, desperately needing these points, and you having a much longer runway the rest of the year. Now, ultimately, this is a coulda, woulda, shoulda conversation, but Rick Tocchet said it after the game on Thursday night. You know, they had a good plan in overtime last week in Calgary. They played really well. They ultimately go on to win that game in the shootout. and he thought they deviated from that plan. They weren't as patient. They didn't reset and hold on to possession, and ultimately it's a turnover from Elias Pettersson that cost them.
Yeah, they were sloppy, and it felt like at certain times they were trying to force it when they didn't have options. And I think Elias Pettersson was one of those plays where he's 90 seconds into a shift, and he's basically going on one-on-two on a play. You're probably going to cough up the puck, and unfortunately it goes back the other way. Broberg scores. But even before that, there was a line change in the overtime, which was a sloppy one. It goes back the other way. Justin Falk ends up hitting the post after, I believe it was Elias Pettersson yet again, going off on a change, and even though St. Louis had possession of the puck. So there was a couple of things in that overtime that you can look back and say, yep, not their greatest. In addition to the loser point, I'm going to throw another thing at you, Batch. You brought one, I'm going to bring the other.
Okay, let's go.
18 points were up for grabs when Artur Shelov has played this year, and they've picked up 5 in those games. So whether it's Shelov's, whether it's another goaltender, you pick up a couple more wins. So let's just say instead of those 5, you even get to 9 points. Half of those, we're talking about an increase of 4 points, and guess what? You're at 80 points, yet again, just below Minnesota, rather than now fighting it out. So not only is it the loser point, it's, you know, when Shelov has gotten starts this year, there's been games where it feels like, you know, there's 1 or 2 bad goals per game. And I go back to the first game of the season against Calgary where they had the lead.
That's where I was just going to go, yeah.
And it felt like there were 2 goals, I want to say, at the very least, where Shelov, you want him to grab those goals. You want him to make those saves. And you lose it there. And that's 2 points right there. That should have been a Vancouver win. But you expand that, that's 13 points lost. If you get a couple of those points back, you're probably in a pretty good spot right now.
Ultimately, though, the Canucks remain in the thick of this playoff race and head to the New York metropolitan area. We already talked a little bit about that game against the Rangers. Obviously, they are also battling for their playoff lives out east in the thick of that wild card race there. As well, as are the New York Islanders, who they're going to see next week. The New Jersey Devils, a little bit more comfortable. They're kind of in a scenario like what we've been talking about with the Canucks. They have 6 overtime losses this year, up to 80 points on the season in third in the Metropolitan Division and looking pretty comfortable to make the playoffs. But that said, not home and cooled yet either by any means. So tough games, desperate buildings, Rick Tocchet called them the other night, and that's going to be the case not just on Saturday, but moving forward the rest of the road trip with Columbus as well, and then a Winnipeg team that isn't desperate, but certainly I would imagine will have some vengeance on their minds after the Canucks skated them out of their own building on Tuesday.
Absolutely. There's got to be some pride there for a team that's been so good this year to say, all right, they smacked us around in their home. We're going to try to do the same when they roll through Winnipeg. One of the things that really nobody's really talking about, Batch, that Saturday game, JT Miller, it's the game against his former team. It's an early puck drop. We've been focusing a lot on that. But with JT Miller, his team, as of right now, has lost 3 games in a row. They're not looking good. They've played 70 games this year. They're stuck at 72 points. So you talk about having that, you know, basically been pushed against the wall here, and now you have to respond. Vancouver has to do that to a certain extent, of course, dropping the points to St. Louis. The New York Rangers, like, this is dire straits for them because the Islanders have games in hand. The Columbus Blue Jackets have games in hand. Ottawa has games in hand, and so does Montreal. So that Saturday game, that Saturday 10 a.m. game against the Vancouver Canucks, you know Vancouver needs urgency. The Rangers, like, this might be one of their last stands at home. It's getting I wouldn't say toxic in New York, but there's a lot of noise coming from MSG to say, hey, wait a second, you made all those moves, and we're still stuck in the same spot.
Well, and one thing you know for a fact is that JT Miller is going to be incredibly motivated, not just to get the win for his team, but to try and get one over on his former teammates as well. So that is a storyline that you're right. I think that conversation is going to ramp up now as we actually approach that game with you know, everything around Miller and Pettersson, and, you know, that Four Nations game was kind of in the focus between USA and Sweden for those same reasons. Well, this one on Saturday morning will be too.
I would be shocked if Peter Laviolette does not put JT Miller in the starting lineup, where, remember, JT Miller, when he was in Vancouver, he always liked to be physical on that first shift, throw his weight around, send a message. Well, if there's a game to send a message against his former team, I would expect JT to do that early, throwing the body around. So you got to join us on air, of course, Sportsnet on TV as well. But that's going to be I think the temperature is going to rise in both markets over the next little bit here.
It certainly will. It's a 10 o'clock puck drop Saturday morning. The pregame show begins bright and early at 9. So set your alarm, get up, make yourself a coffee, and join us for the call on Saturday morning. We also need to talk about Kiefer Sherwood, who scored a big goal in the game against the Blues for the Canucks as well, ultimately to tie it at 1 and put them right back in it. And that was a really timely goal early in that third period as well. But Sherwood also was credited with 10 hits in the game against the Blues, which means he has tied his former teammate Jeremy Lauzon for the single-season NHL record for hits in recorded history. So the first hit he lays on Saturday against the Rangers will set a new NHL record. And the pace this guy has been throwing the body on is obviously it's unmatched because we haven't seen it before, but it is quite unbelievable how durable he's been while also being such a tremendous physical presence for this team this year and scoring for them too. Kiefer Sherwood now up to 15 goals.
The goal was massive. I loved his physical play in the third period against the St. Louis Blues. You mentioned the 10 hits, but this was a player that was trying to will his team back into the game. And even his post-game comments, you could tell he wanted that win so badly. This is a guy that, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve. It's, first of all, really impressive to see that he's able to get to this number this early in the season. We're talking about 69 games played.
Nice.
It's very nice, and it'll be even nicer on Saturday when he gets that next hit. But what number is he going to end off on, right? At the end of the season, are we going to be talking about 450 hits, 430 hits?
500, maybe.
500. Could he join the – he's already going to be the only person in the 384-hit club, but could he get to, you know, potentially 500 hits? I love the way he plays, and in my opinion, you know, probably one of the best signings Patrick Alvin has made, because not only has – he's been a player that outperforms his contract batch, but he's also a heart and soul guy. He will fire up his team. He will drag them into the fight. And he's a playoff type of performer. You hope that Kiefer Sherwood is able to play in the playoffs, because this is a guy, as the Vancouver Canucks know well from the series against Nashville last year, you know, this is the type of guy you can win with in the playoffs. This is the type of guy that is going to create offense and chaos in the, you know, the offensive zone. He's doing it in the regular season. You hope that you can do it in the playoffs as well if the Vancouver Canucks get there.
Yeah, for context, he has more than 100 hits, more than the second closest guy in the NHL. So a tremendous physical presence for this Canucks team. And you talk about him being sort of a fiery team guy. What did you make about his comments in relation to Jason Dickinson earlier in the week? Obviously, Dickinson took that run at Philip Hedel in the game against the Blackhawks last weekend. Hedel has yet to return to the Canucks lineup. Dickinson was not penalized, did not receive any sort of supplemental discipline. And Sherwood basically came out and said, you know, Dickinson didn't have the guts or whatever you want to call it to come back on the ice after laying that hit, and we'll get him next year. And you could tell by the tone in his voice, he was quite emotional about that. So, you know, that's a guy you love to have as a teammate that is already preparing to stick up for one of his guys, looking forward to a game next season that we don't know when it'll even happen yet.
That is a heart and soul team guy. He is a player that's going to look out for his team. And listen, what happens next year whenever Chicago plays Vancouver, whether Jason Dickinson's in the lineup or not, this is a player that cares about his teammate. So we'll see what that happens. As a hockey fan, I love to hear that, because it tells you that, you know, if there's something that's done on the ice that the referees miss or they're not able to correct, or the player himself and his, you know, I was talking to some folks in the hockey world this week about that, and they're just saying, if you're a coach, what are you doing? You're not putting that player on the ice, but you're getting guys like Connor Bedard and the other young players like Frank Nazar and others on the ice that are so young. And basically, Derek Forbert and other players are going to be looking for, not retribution, but they want to play a physical game.
Stand up for their teammates.
Yeah, send the guy out there, answer the bell. And remember, this is Jason Dickinson, who fought Luke Cunningham the night before. So he fights. He actually, you know, beat up Luke Cunningham in that fight as well. So if you're going to throw a hit like that, answer the bell. The comments are fiery. We'll see what happens next year. I'm sure the NHL will have probably a conversation if they haven't already with Kiefer Sherwood, because they don't like that very much. But as somebody who's probably in that room, somebody who's, you know, got a locker right next to him, a stall right next to him, you appreciate that because the guy has his back. We'll see what happens next year, though, Batch, because it's a long time away. That's a heat of the moment comment. Maybe in the, you know, after a little bit, and you're still fresh that your teammate got hurt. Next year's a long time away.
It certainly is, but we'll continue to follow that, and we'll see again if that fiery temperature that Kiefer Sherwood brings to the game will help the Canucks down the stretch run here, and hopefully into the postseason as well. All right, we're going to step aside. On the other side, we'll open up the mailbag and answer the questions that you submitted for us to discuss right here on In the Booth, brought to you by Bells and Whistles on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. We call the Canuck games here on the radio, and we'll be on the call on Saturday morning for the Canucks and Rangers, a 10 o'clock face-off. The pregame show gets underway at 9 a.m. And as always, I'll remind you now, if you're listening on the radio, you've missed any part of the show, it does live as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. Make sure to subscribe to that. You get In the Booth with myself and Randeep every week. You get the Daily Show Monday to Friday with Sat and Reach, and you get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick as well. And before we get into the mailbag, Randeep, you had the honor of hosting the Canucks for Kids Fund Telethon alongside Jody Vance earlier this week, the 35th annual Telethon, another great event, another great evening to support the Canucks for Kids Fund, and it was a really successful night in terms of fundraising as well.
That's right, over $600,000 donated, and thank you to everyone that was able to support the Canucks for Kids Fund. So this is, you know, going to, of course, Canuck Place Children's Hospice, the Canuck Autism Network, and BC Children's Hospital Foundation, and many other organizations and programs as well. So vital care for children and their families in this province. So thank you to everybody that tuned in, that was able to support whatever they were able to support. There's no donation that's too small, and an excellent job by the community to come together for a very, very important cause. An honor to be involved.
Absolutely. It was tremendous, and great work done all around, all the charities, everybody chipping in and helping out, and everybody who donated as well. And if you didn't get a chance to donate at the telethon, but you want to contribute to a good cause, we want to tell you about an initiative through Canuck Place right now called Milk and Cookies for Canuck Place, presented by BC Dairy. It gives you the choice of where, when, and how to fundraise in support of children with life-threatening illnesses and the families who love them. BC Dairy is going to generously match donations up to $30,000. So you can donate to the Canuck Place Cookie Jar, purchase from the Canuck Place Cookie Club, or sign up for Cookie Day and host a bake sale at your school. So lots of options here on how to contribute, or you can donate to the campaign. Go to CanuckPlace.org. And again, donations up to $30,000 being matched by BC Dairy. So, you know, a great initiative there. Canuck Place, a great foundation. The Children's Hospice, tremendous. It has been such a big part of this community and this market for such a long time. And so if you didn't donate at the telethon, we urge you to contribute to Milk and Cookies for Canuck Place, presented by BC Dairy.
Fantastic initiative, and, you know, such meaningful work that Canuck Place does. I had a chance to meet up with a couple of the families that have experience at Canuck Place, and they were going through some tough times with, you know, their siblings as well, and that hospice care. But that's a community that really supports, you know, families as they go through a difficult time. So if you can support, please do.
Absolutely. We'll get into the mailbag here in a minute, Randeep. But as always, we have to remind the listeners that In the Booth here on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with happy hour pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. And I have to mention, I had the Hershey Blast Sunday last time I was at Bells and Whistles.
Oh,
buddy. Elite. Elite.
Haven't had it yet. I'll add it to the list. Yeah. Hey, we said we're going to record in the booth, in a booth at Bells and Whistles, so maybe we'll have to order one when we're there.
Elite.
All right, the mailbag now, as we answer your questions submitted on social media. Let's start with Justin in East Van, who writes in and asks, what are the expectations for Tom Vilander with the Canucks? And interesting conversation. It's going to kind of depend on where the Canucks are in this playoff race if and when Vilander signs and joins the NHL team. There's already a couple of other young defensemen playing games right now in Elias Pettersson and Victor Mancini. And, you know, Vilander, an interesting talent, obviously a top-level pick, a first-round pick for this organization. I just wonder if they're going to be willing to drop him into games if there's a lot at stake in them, if they're still in the thick of the playoff race. Do you trust him right away? Do you get him some practice time and see how you think he's going to fit in? Conversely, if the Canucks fall out of the playoff race, which again, it's so tight right now, I don't necessarily expect that to happen, but then there's more of an opportunity to get Vilander minutes and play him in an increased role and maybe see how he fits with Quinn Hughes on a pairing. But ultimately, this is my way of saying, at least for this season, I'd want to limit expectations on Tom Vilander and what he might be able to bring to the Canucks at the NHL level.
Well, in terms of a timeline, the earliest he could potentially play for the Vancouver Canucks, or, you know, at least BU season could be over, is March 27th, and the latest it could be is April 12th. So there's a bit of a two-week window to really figure out when he's going to be available. Now, what are the assets of his game? His mobility, his ability to make reads. He's got a physical edge at the college level, but what does that translate to the pro level, right? We're talking about two very different styles of hockey, and I think your point about the situation that this team will be in is a very important one. Rick Tocchet really likes to manage his team's mistakes. He wants a team that doesn't have multiple mistakes, doesn't compound mistakes. Throwing a young kid, however skilled he is, that doesn't have pro hockey experience in North America is a risk. And, you know, you look at that, I wouldn't say risk averse coach, but for any coach this time of the year, you want to be in a situation where you're limiting your mistakes. And that's why I think Tom Vilander, it's going to be challenged to get into the lineup here for the Vancouver Canucks, because it's such a high stress situation, a high pressure situation, Batch. So, we'll see. Like, you know, ideally for Vancouver, he doesn't play, because that implies that you're playing high pressure games down the stretch, unless you've built a bit of a cushion in the playoff spot. And then maybe you can give him a couple of games, one or two games, just to get him a taste at the NHL level. Otherwise, that's a pretty risky proposition for a young kid.
Yeah, I think the one thing that would benefit him in getting into the lineup potentially is the lefty righty thing, where we've seen Elias Pettersson over the last couple of games playing the right side as a left shot. Well, Tom Vilander is a right shot. So there certainly is the opportunity that you could get him in there over a guy like Elias Pettersson. But here's the thing. Victor Mancini has been in there as a right shot and has shown pretty well and has gained some of the trust of the coaching staff. So, like, I think this is a good problem to have, where you're talking about three young defensemen that all could earn their minutes, all could be deserving of a spot in the lineup. Obviously, Vilander has the highest pedigree of all of those guys as a first-round pick, and so I'm sure lots of fans would want to see him get a look, and I'm sure he will at some point, assuming that they sign him when his college season is done. But the fact that you've got so many options in terms of young defensemen, and the fact that this is a conversation that isn't just, you know, for right now, it's going to carry forward to next year in terms of camp battles for those guys to end up on the NHL roster, end up playing minutes in the National Hockey League. That's a great problem to have when you've got three young defensemen that you all want to try and get in there somehow.
Yeah, having Vilander at, you know, practice and getting him through the drills and getting him through the competitive nature of practice will be good. And then you can kind of figure out how you want to go about this. If his game is there and there's trust in it, maybe he gets some NHL games. And if he doesn't batch, potentially AHL. Remember, Elias Pettersson last year played 8 regular season games with the Abbotsford Canucks. Then he played another 4 for the Abbotsford Canucks in the playoffs. So a total of 12 games that gave him that taste of pro hockey. And he came in confident the following year for that camp battle, as you mentioned. Is, even though, you know, the first round pick with Tom Vilander, and there's obviously another, I think, a little bit more expectation for him compared to maybe Elias Pettersson, given where they were drafted, the path could be very similar, where you want to give him a taste of the NHL level or at least the NHL atmosphere, and then you say, all right, go do your thing at the AHL level.
All right, our next question here on the mailbag on In the Booth comes from at Morin Sohiel on Twitter, and he asks, or they ask, I should say, who would be the prime targets for the Canucks this offseason? And we got into this a little bit last week on the show, looking at potential UFAs that they might chase. I think we agreed that a centerman is going to be a priority, preferably a top six centerman, and maybe that changes a little bit if they extend a guy like Pugh Suter now that he's had a 20-goal season. But what are your thoughts initially on primary targets for the Canucks? I think, you know, the center ice position, certainly. The winger position, certainly, if Brock Besser walks in free agency. And players in their mid-20s that kind of fit along the age timeline of guys like Hughes and Pettersson is what we're looking at from a Canucks perspective.
Yeah, it is a little tricky now because some of the names we would have thought were on the top of that list, they've already been moved. And for each other, Josh Norris was, you know, a name that a lot of folks had in mind. I certainly thought that as well. He goes from Ottawa to Buffalo in return for Dylan Cousins, who was another name that was on that list. So once you start digging a little deeper on potential teams that might be looking at trying to upgrade or thinking long-term, it gets a little bit more challenging, Batch. And that's where, you know, I start looking at teams maybe further down to say, okay, who is potentially here that, you know, might want to change some things around in the offseason, where maybe they've underachieved? Are there potentially some 24, 25-year-olds on a team like a New York Rangers? Alexi Lafreniere is a name that comes to mind. Obviously, they've got a lot of high-end talent there. They traded for JT Miller. If they don't make the playoffs, you know, what would it take for a 23-year-old Lafreniere? He's not a center, but he is certainly a winger that can play the right-hand side. He gives you goals. Is there potential there? And can you force a move there? The Canucks and the Rangers have made a couple of deals this year. That's one player I would say. Is that potentially a player that could be on the move if the Rangers are looking to shake it up a little bit?
Another name that I've heard mentioned in the market that would be intriguing is Mason McTavish out of Anaheim. I don't know how realistic that would be. He's a pending RFA. That's a team that has trended in the right direction over the second half of the season. They've got a lot of good young pieces. You know, either of those guys, it's going to cost you a pretty penny to go out and acquire them. But the reason we're talking about potential young players via trade is that, you know, there aren't any obvious options in unrestricted free agency. And you can go back and listen to last week's episode of the show where we broke that down in a little bit more detail. But it does feel like if the Canucks really want to address some of the holes in their roster or upgrade their forward group, that the trade market might be the most ideal way to do that.
And it's going to be difficult to get two high-impact players in the offseason. I think aiming for one probably is the key. But let me go further. I think down the pecking order, we've talked about some really high-end players in a Mason McTavish and a Alexi Lafreniere. Let me give you another name that's probably lower on the pecking order, but if you're looking at a 3C rather than 2C, let's just say you want to highlight, maybe your big move this offseason is trying to get a winger and you want to add maybe more of a depth center, whether you bring back Pugh Suter or not. I'm going to bring up a local player here. Detroit's an interesting spot. Michael Rasmussen.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a player that may potentially be available if they're trying to move? This is a 25-year-old centerman. He, in the short term, will be able to give you a 3C behind a Philip Hedel, and you maybe are able to at least get some sort of, you know, a heavier game, some matchup minutes there for Michael Rasmussen. He's good in the faceoff dot as well. A pretty manageable $3.2 million. And remember, if you're replacing Pugh Suter and Pugh Suter's salary demands are significantly higher, is that a player that might pop up on the radar for not only Vancouver, but other teams as well?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, there are options for this management group, and it's going to be a fascinating offseason. Ultimately, though, there's still plenty of stretch run to focus on. So we get these questions in every week, and we answer them about what the offseason looks like. And I can understand with the up and down season and some of the adversity this team has faced and, you know, some of the disappointing performances that you know, fans are naturally going to look ahead to the offseason and hope for improvements. But at the same time, this is a heck of a playoff race this team is in right now. And our next question comes in from Robbie, who asks, will we see Demko on this team in the future? And this is an interesting question because he doesn't specify short-term or long-term. So we're going to answer both. In the short term, yeah, you're going to see Demko soon. He's been back at practice with the team. You know, I would be surprised if he doesn't have a chance to get back into a game on this road trip at some point, based on the work we've seen him put in both with the team and on his own in the last week or so, Randeep. So short term, Demko coming back is good news for this Canucks group because, you know, we already talked about Artur Shelov's earlier in the show and how there are points that were up for grabs for the Canucks that they didn't get in the games that Shelov's played. And that could ultimately make the difference between making or missing the playoffs at the end of the day. We also know that Shelov's hasn't played very much. One win since November was that game against the Blackhawks last weekend. So getting Thatcher Demko back, best case scenario as a guy that was a runner up to the Vezina last year, but even worst case scenario, a guy who's a competent NHL goaltender who can spell off Kevin Lankinen in a few times so he doesn't have to play a ton of games down the stretch and you don't wear him out. That's incredibly important. And I do expect that we'll see Demko in the crease at some point on this trip with five games left on it.
Yeah. I was asked about the X factor for the Canucks down the stretch here on Helford and Brough on a recent hit. And in the playoffs, if you get in the playoffs, I believe it's going to be Kiefer Sherwood and Jamie Dodd said Dakota Joshua, which I agree with. But getting to the playoffs, I think it's going to be Thatcher Demko, right? If you can get a rested, healthy Thatcher Demko down the stretch, that gives you, to your point, a fresher Kevin Lankinen, which should make him a better Kevin Lankinen. And then on top of that, are you able to get victories when you need that backup to step in? Are you able to have confidence in your backup goaltending? And we'll see. There's a couple of games that I look at to say, if he is right, which is the first thing, could he play against the Islanders? Could he play against the Columbus Blue Jackets? I don't see him in that game against the Winnipeg Jets to close out the road trip. But, you know, the final three games, are those two games against the Islanders and the Columbus Blue Jackets the ones that you look at and say, if he's healthy, if he's ready to go, is that potentially the spot? But he could be an absolute game changer for the Vancouver Canucks. When he is healthy, when he's on form, he is the best goaltender they have. We've seen him. He was the second best goaltender last year. But it's just having, I think there's an element of caution right now with his health. Just you want to believe it when you see it with Thatcher Demko. And we just haven't been able to see that consistently enough, Batch.
No, we haven't. And it was interesting hearing from Corey Schneider earlier this week on the station talking about his advice to Demko would be do not come back until you are 100%. Don't rush it. Don't try to force your way back in because Schneider had a ton of experience with injuries in his career and ultimately they really affected him. So we'll see in terms of Demko. I do get the chance the team is slow playing this. We've seen him work out on the ice quite a bit. We've seen him take part in practices and morning skates. And he is starting to ramp up now. Now, because there wasn't specifics provided with the question, we can build off that and talk about longer-term Thatcher Demko on this hockey club. And right now, he's in the fourth year of a five-year deal that pays him $5 million annually. His long-term future as a Canuck is going to be dependent on what we see to start next year. I don't think the player would want to sign an extension as of July 1st, even though he's eligible to do that, just because this was almost a write-off season for Thatcher Demko. And there's plenty of time for him to come back to play a role down the stretch, potentially into the playoffs. But in terms of being healthy, playing the lion's share of the games, building on a runner-up season for the Vezina last year, he wasn't able to do that. So you don't want to sign a contract from a position of weakness, for lack of a better term, and coming off a tough year for Demko, I can't imagine his camp would want to extend unless it's going to be a bridge deal or a shorter term extension. So for me, the questions around Demko long term with this team are what kind of summer can you have? Can you stay healthy? Can you avoid injuries if you do get back into the crease late in this year? And then coming off a good summer, can you reestablish yourself next year as one of the best goalies in the NHL? If you can, and you can stay healthy and you could play a lot. And guess what? Kevin Lankinen's here now too on a 5-year extension. So it can be more of a tandem and you don't have to carry as heavy a workload as you have in the past. If all of that makes sense and works, then I could see a scenario where Thatcher Demko is here long term. But if any of these questions continue, then the future looks a lot more murky for this goaltender in terms of not just his future with or without the Canucks, but his future in terms of his career and its overall trajectory.
Yeah, quite simply, I think you covered the Thatcher Demko side of things really well. You limit your earning power signing a deal right now. This is probably the last big money deal that Thatcher Demko is going to sign, unless he signs a 1 or 2 year bridge deal. Of course, you know, that comes with an element of risk as well, but let's be honest, this age range is where you make the big money. Do you really want to limit that by, you know, signing this deal where you're at a low right now? From a Canucks perspective, same thing. If you are spending money on a player, you want to see them in training camp. You want to see them play preseason games. You want to see on October 7th, when the next season starts, are you in a position to be A, healthy, confident in your game, confident that you can be a starter and be committed long, you know, term money to as well. So I think from a team perspective, they both have to go in a wait and see. And for, you know, Thatcher Demko, if he succeeds, if he's healthy, yeah, you're looking at UFA status and potentially earning a lot more in the free market. Or if you want to stay in Vancouver and Vancouver sees a fit for you, it works out too. But Batch, health is most important with this player. This is a guy that has had to deal with an injury that nobody ever heard of before, and now we're all popliteus experts here in the city. But the reality of the situation is, this is a really unique circumstance. And the Kevin Lankinen contract is a big factor here as well, because the Canucks have a bit of a security blanket here to say, hey, if you figure it out, we can still spend a little bit more on goaltending. We want a 1-2 punch for the right price. But if not, if you don't figure it out, we got a guy that we're confident in as well. So, you know, that's the business of hockey. The Canucks have to look out for themselves as well. But that Kevin Lankinen deal is a pretty big deal. It's a 5-year deal. They gave a little bit more term on that front. And now if you're Thatcher Demko, you're thinking about the short term, but you're also thinking about the long term and saying, hey, where can I be a starter? Where can I be a bona fide starter? And that's what every goalie wants, Batch. So we'll see what happens. I think this is going to be a really interesting talking point heading into the summer, whenever the season is over for Vancouver, whether that's in April or ideally in June, and we're talking about Scott Rhodesellis.
Yeah, and well, here's the interesting thing, though, as we wrap up this episode of the show and wrap up this conversation on Canuck goaltending. You know, that Kevin Lankinen deal, as much as they've already committed term and money to the crease, that's a contract that you could move for a goaltender that has proved himself valuable. And if he can even build on that and have a good stretch run here and help this team into the playoffs and maybe make some noise in that regard, that looks like a team-friendly contract, especially with the cap going up. If for some reason you don't want to commit a ton of money to the crease, but Demko has a resurgent year next year and you have more belief in his, you know, stability in the crease, you could move off that Lankinen deal. It wouldn't be too hard for you to do so. There is a no movement clause in the first 2 years, but year 3 through 5 are a 15-team no trade list, according to Puckpedia. So, you know, as much as you sign a guy long term, I think the plan is probably for him to be here for 5 years. You know, you could divert from that plan if you didn't want to commit too much money to your crease and you did want to sign Thatcher Demko long term as well.
Sure. And I think the one thing we haven't talked about here is developing goalies, right? Kevin Lankinen is currently a starter. He's got the long-term deal. There's some uncertainty with Thatcher Demko based on health. But in the next couple of years, even if it's next 2 to 3 years, is there somebody that elevates their game at the AHL level? Or is there somebody that can at least include themselves in the conversation, whether it's Nikita Tolopilo, whether it's Archer Shelovs, Koskinen-Vuo got a deal from the organization as well, the young goaltender at Harvard. Are there players within this organization that say, you know what, there's a redundancy all of a sudden. Why would we pay top dollar? And, you know, it's tough to think about it that way because Thatcher Demko and Kevin Lankinen are well-loved in the city so far, Demko going back quite some time now. But if you have a younger, cheaper option, a lot of organizations will go for that, but that player has to elevate themselves over the next year or two. Without that, yeah, Vancouver's going to have to pay either Thatcher Demko or another goaltender that might be in UFA status.
And we'll see how that progresses, both in the short term this year with Demko and when he gets back into the crease, hopefully at some point on this road trip, and in the longer term as well. And that does it for this week's edition of In the Booth. Thanks for listening. Randeep and I will be back on the air on Saturday morning for the Canucks and the Rangers. A 10 o'clock faceoff. The pregame show will begin at 9 right here on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.